Listen to House Speaker Paul Ryan crowing now about his own health care plan and finally getting it considered on Capitol Hill. Despite his and the GOP's frustration with Obamacare, you can hear a real Ryan vision as well.
If you're going to repair the American healthcare system and fix its problems, you have to repeal Obamacare and replace it with something better, patient-centered healthcare.
Ryan spoke on NBC's Meet the Press last weekend. Dr. Danielle Ofri says patient-centered healthcare is something that can be achieved without overhauling the entire healthcare system. As a doctor practicing medicine at Bellevue Hospital here in New York City and teaching in the NYU School of Medicine, she argues a simple innovation involves doctors just deciding to listen to their patients with their whole heart. If doctors could make the time, she says, put down the pen, step away from the computer, and just let a patient communicate uninterrupted for at least a full minute, it would accomplish a lot. What patients say, what doctors hear, is Dr. Ofri's profile of what she says is medicine's most important and powerful diagnostic tool, the doctor-patient conversation. Historically, Ofri says medical school students are taught little about this kind of tool, but things have got to start changing.
Increasingly, it's being recognized, but it's still a small part behind the, quote, hard sciences. But I think as we look at the data about error rates, misdiagnoses, if we're looking at if patient satisfaction now is counting in terms of hospital reimbursement, if we're looking at malpractice suits and the cost of that, I think we're beginning to realize that it's not an affable bonus, but a critical part to, you know, excellent patient care.
But are you saying that medical education prepares doctors really only to know extremely blunt statistics, blunt features of a patient's condition, like you would find in the emergency room, and anything more subtle than that is like almost impossible for them to see?
Right, because the subtle signs are very hard to teach. The way we teach in medicine, we use PowerPoint, we use multiple choice tests. But the way you teach communication skills and subtle skills is the, you know, small group one-on-one observation of a seasoned clinician interviewing a patient. It takes time, it takes resources, much harder to do. But I think as doctors move along in their careers, they recognize that these skills are the ones that really make them the great doctors and not just the fairly good doctors with good, you know, lists of things they've memorized.
That's interesting. When did you in your own practice, in your own clinical work, discover that you needed to do work on the quality of the patient-doctor conversation?
Well, once or twice I've had medical errors where I didn't catch what was going on. And I realized in retrospect that buried in there was what was really important, but I missed it because it was, you know, mixed. And for example, there was a young woman who came in with a healthy woman with a minor scalp condition, and she also complained of various aches and pains in different parts of her body. I examined her. Nothing added up to any sort of illness. I just reassured her, you're healthy, you're fine. And I showed her out the door. And as she's out in the hallway, hand on the doorknob, she said, do you think maybe these parts hurt because that's where my boyfriend shot me with a dart gun? And I had missed domestic violence. And she was giving me the somatic symptoms, the bodily symptoms, but she didn't feel comfortable talking about the abuse she had suffered. And I almost missed it. Had she not been courageous enough to hang on to the doorknob and tell me, I wouldn't have known. I would have just sent her along like many other doctors. And in fact, domestic violence and other issues, eating disorders and depression, suicidality, are there much more commonly than we are treating. And so we should be seeing this all the time, and yet patients aren't comfortable, and we don't ask. We stick with the concrete, manifest content in the words, and we can often miss it. And I realize that I need to really be careful when people are giving, for example, mixed symptoms like that, to be probing, is there anything else going on underneath before I write it off as just the aches and pains of life?
How do you get patients to trust you enough to maybe make that point at the beginning of the conversation rather than when they're on their way out the door?
So the beginning, the listening in the beginning, even for a minute, is quite a lot. And I think a person will pick up on that you're respecting them, what they're saying is of value, makes a huge difference. The other place I find where trust can be gained is during the physical exam. Because the physical exam is the one point where we're together without technology between us. No computer, no scribe, no laptop. It's just the doctor and the patient touching, talking, and it's a kind of intimacy, a non-romantic one, but an intimacy, and often patients will reveal what's on their mind during the physical exam. So while I'm doing the physical exam to hear their heart and lungs, I'm also using it as a secondary time to have a slightly deeper conversation. Often that's the moment patients will talk about the more uncomfortable or embarrassing things.
There's also, I think, a responsibility on the part of patients to not feel as though an MRI means something real is being done for them, or a procedure is a sign that something actually meaningful is happening, and to get into some sort of relationship where the doctor and the patient can really sort of both see the subtleties of what's going on in someone's healthy life and therefore know very quickly when something's going wrong.
Well, that's why I feel that the patient as well needs to recognize that the doctor-patient conversation is the most important thing for them as well. We talk about the annual physical. It really is the annual history. It's the annual conversation that's much more important than the physical part or the blood test. And not to feel shortchanged if you didn't get, you know, 1,000 blood tests or an MRI or an antibiotic prescription, that the talking, the conversation is the medical diagnosis and can often be the medical treatment as well.
So, you know, how does this work at Bellevue and how does this work with students?
Well, so when we work with students, we encourage them to take a very full history, spend an hour if you'd like, and really talk to the patient. Forget writing things down. You're not responsible, ultimately, so you can just take the time and talk. And honestly, the patients love the interviews by the students. They often think that's their real doctor because that's the person who spends the most time with them. And the student can often be the one who finds out the key to the diagnosis because it's only in the 45-minute conversation the patient will tell them the stray fact that could be the key to diagnosis. So protecting time for that, emphasizing that the talking part is the most important part, I think, is how we're going to train the next generation of doctors.
Is this going to be incremental, or is there a coming revolution in medical education? And will the reimbursement models follow those
kinds
of changes?
Incremental. The medical establishment is, you know, it's an aircraft carrier. We can't turn it around so easily. But we're starting to see it shift a little bit. For years, nobody wanted to go into primary care, internal medicine, pediatrics, because they're low paid, a lot of work. You wanted to go into the specialties that were higher paid, easier hours. That's beginning to shift. I see it amongst the students and house staff that they are finding the appeal of primary care. And partly, as medicines become less lucrative, the people who used to go into medicine for money, they've departed. They're down in Wall Street or wherever. And those who come into medicine now really are there because they want to do it. And for many of them, it is being part of a patient's life. It's practicing in your community, in an underserved area where you can really make an enormous difference.
Dr. Danielle Ofri is an associate professor of medicine at the NYU School of Medicine. She practices medicine at Bellevue Hospital in New York and author of What Patients Say, What Doctors Hear. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
So what has your experience been communicating with your doctor?
Hi, this is Amanda from Waltham, Massachusetts. So my prior doctor used to diagnose me as obese. Oh, you have an ear infection? Well, maybe you should lose weight. Oh, you have XYZ? Well, maybe you should lose some weight. I really wish I was joking. This mindset is not just harmful, it's dangerous, and I know I'm not alone.
From Oakland, California, we go to our nurse practitioner first for medical concerns and physicals. She makes recommendations and referrals, often acting as a case manager. It took us a while to find someone like her, and it was worth the search. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or join the conversation on the Takeaways Facebook page.